We're holding the last session of this semester on building the Jewish home, and I want to review together with adding a few points and trying to highlight a few points. We discussed the concept of nisuin, marriage, and that the word nisuin in Hebrew has the root nasa, to uplift, and that nisuin is supposed to be uplifting for both parties. Marriage is an uplifting entity that's supposed to encompass all of one's life. It's not only in the aspects of the home, but when one builds his home correctly, then the marriage shines light upon everything he does. And it's the foundation for everything he does inside the house, outside the house, for everything. The best investment one can invest in is his home. Now, we have relationships with many people. We have a roommate, a chavruta, a friend, a best friend, our parents, our siblings. There's no relationship which is going to be as all-encompassing as the relationship between a husband and his wife. The relationship between a husband and his wife affects everything both of them do. And it's good that it's so. But in light of that, we decided to begin these classes in preparation for building our homes. There's... In the United States, we play baseball. So when you play baseball, you have a special mitt. It's a hard ball. So in order to catch the ball, you wear a special mitt. Now, you wear the mitt on the hand that you don't throw it. You need to catch it with one hand, throw it with the other hand. So there's a lefty mitt and a righty mitt. Most people are righties, so they wear the mitt on the left hand. They catch the ball with their left hand, so they could throw it with their right hand. But there are some people who are lefties, so they wear the hand on their right hand in order to catch the ball with that hand, to be able to throw it with their left hand. So the joke always goes about a lefty who gave a righty a gift, and he, of course, gave him a lefty mitt. He gave him a mitt like he would need. And the righty receives the mitt and he says, what could I do with it? So the lefty says, well, my birthday's coming up in 2 months. You'll be able to give it back to me. On the one end, he ends the joke by saying, you could give back to me. But the truth is that most of us, when we try to impart upon others, even gifts, we automatically look at ourselves and think, what would I want? And that's what we try to do unto others. Now, in general, that could work. The Torah itself says, "V'avtal racha kamocha," and Hillel said, "Madesa nilach lecha v'achlotevid." What you hate, don't do unto others. But notice Hillel didn't say, what you love, do unto others. He said, what you don't like, don't do unto others. What should you do? That's a separate question. When we're trying to build our home, so we want to give. The basis for the home is ahava. Ahava means giving. When we look at the movies and when we look at Western culture, we see love as being described as something that you receive. This is what she does for me. This is what she is for me. Even when you see the love that's expressed physically in the streets and in advertisements, you're not seeing love. That's not love. Love is not represented by the physical. The physical, if it doesn't stem from true love, is taking. It's not giving. What he wants is what he gets. What she wants is what she gets. But that's not love. Love is giving. And when there's true love, then the physical is a vehicle to express what is there in the spiritual. If love is giving, and when we give, we have to recognize what the other person needs and wants, not what I need and want, then we have to take time to study and understand what it is that our spouses are going to need and want. We can't think that just because I love her, I'm going to know to give her what she needs, because the only way I'm going to give it to her is by judging what would I want. Well, we're very different. The basis for any relationship, not only with one's wife, is a basic element of respect. And mutual respect is elementary. We're going to discuss building a beautiful home, but this basis must always be there. And sometimes people think, ooh, they're a perfect couple. They really match for one another. They're that. So there's a certain facade that everyone sees about certain couples. And there's truth to it, but not all of it is true. We have to recognize that every couple has their issues. And if what you see looks good, chances are that the couple at least has that basic respect, and in front of others, they don't bring out their fights. And that's very important. Now, I want to just reiterate that what we're discussing is the relationship post-marriage. We're not discussing what you look for when you're dating, and we're not discussing what the attitude has to be when you're dating. But once a couple is married, then the couple has to recognize that even a couple that quote-unquote is not a good couple, even a couple who don't get along and don't match, like one woman told me, 40 years ago I didn't want to marry my husband and it hasn't changed. But they're still married. And they built a beautiful family. And they did beautiful things together. And they take care of one another. And she still says that she wishes she would have never married him. And there are many couples who live that way. And it's a problem. We'll discuss that in a second. How do they manage to build a beautiful home? Because they have the basic respect for one another. The Gemara records that even among our sages, there were those that didn't have beautiful marriages. The Gemara says that when Rav used to leave Rav Chiya was in Rebbe's generation, last generation of Tanoim. And he had a nephew, Rav. Now when Rav used to leave the Beis Medrash, so Rav Chiya would tell him, may Hashem save you from something that's worse than death. So the Gemara says, is there something that's worse than death? So the Gemara continues that Rav, his own wife, used to pain him. When he'd ask her to make him one kind of dish, she'd always make the other kind of dish. And when he'd ask for beans, she'd make a different kind of dish. When he'd ask for that dish, she'd make him beans. Always the opposite of what he asked for. Now he had a son named Chia. And his son, he saw what was going on. So he'd tell his son, ask your mother to make beans. So he'd switch. He'd say the other kind of dish. And so the mother would make exactly what her husband wanted. He'd bring him the dish and he'd say, what happened? So the son said, I switched. So Rav said, that's what people say, that your sons will teach you. Those that come from you will teach you. But he said, you don't do that, he told his son. Because the prophet says, Limdu leshonam daber shekel. The prophet rebukes the Jewish people for teaching themselves to lie. So he says, don't lie. It's not a good custom to get used to a lie. The Gemara continues and says that Rav Chiya, his wife used to constantly get him upset. She always did things to annoy him. And whenever he'd go places, if he found something nice for her, anything nice, he'd wrap it up and bring it home for her. So Rav asked him, but she gets on your nerves. She does everything to pain you. She does everything to annoy you. So he said, is she bringing up my children? Is she being a wife? Are we having marital relations? She's doing her minimum. That's enough. I'm still going to try everything to make her happy. She's doing her bare minimum. Again, I'm not talking to the guys who are dating. You don't search for a wife this way. But this teaches us an attitude. Once a person's married, people expect she should do this and that and the other thing. And Rav also asked Rav Chiya. He said, why are you doing so many nice things for her? Look at what she's doing to you. And Rav Chiya said, no. She's doing her minimum. She's doing her part. Fine, I'm going to do my best to make her happy. So we see a few things here. We see that even in the time of the Talmud, not everyone had the most beautiful marriage in the world. And we see that that didn't stop them from investing in it. And that their perspective was, there's a minimum. And that minimum she's doing. So what's the minimum? She's giving the kids to eat. She's not letting the baby starve. And she's my wife. Sometimes we're together. That's the minimum. Now, We also see that Rav Chiya, how did he make his wife happy? Wherever he went, if he saw something special, he brought it to her. And that's something that people have to remember. Souvenirs, people usually buy for themselves. And if they're smart, they buy them for their wives. I was there and I saw something beautiful and I thought, you got to have this. I was walking by and I saw this beautiful flower and I was saying, this belongs on your table. It doesn't even have to be something that you buy. Sometimes you go to a wedding and they throw candies and they're wrapped in an intricate fashion. So if you bring it home, that's something your wife's going to appreciate. Because what are you showing her? You're showing her, wherever I am, I'm thinking, wherever I am, I was thinking, gee, this can make you happy. Now, honoring one another, the basic level of respect, is especially important in front of others. As we discussed, never to make jokes at a wife's expense, not to contradict her, in the home. So it includes basic respect. For some reason, couples think they don't have to say please and thank you to one another. Why not? The person who you respect most or who you have the most vetted interest, even in a selfish level, to show respect is your wife. So of course, people shouldn't remember the most basic elements of respect. It should go beyond that, to holding the door, to helping her out. But at least, a person should maintain the basic levels of respect. Honoring a person means honoring who they are. All too often, we're busy measuring one another. And the closer we get to a person, the more we measure them. We measure our parents. They're not from enough, they're not nice enough, they're not good enough people. And when we get married, it's very easy to slip into measuring our spouse. And when you measure a person, then you're automatically belittling them. I can measure you. Well, who am I to measure you? There was once a conversation. I said something. I said, does it make sense? So the person answered me, he said, it makes sense to me. This is especially important in the beginning. The biggest enemy of the engagement period and the first few years of marriage is the thought, maybe this wasn't right. And the thought, okay, why do I have to put up with A, B, and C? And starting to measure our spouses. And this is especially true for men, but there are also many women who have this problem. Especially in our day and age, whether we like it or not, we're so accustomed to seeing divorces that it becomes an automatic backdrop in our minds. And a person has to train himself that he's not going to think this way. Our responsibility is, once we're married, this is she. This is my wife. 40 days before I was created, in heavens they declared, this is the woman I am to marry. And now if things are tough, if things are in a fashion that requires work, so I'll work at it. Every marriage requires work. There's no such thing as a marriage that doesn't require work. The second a person enters the stage where he's measuring, well, what do I have? He's lost. Because no person could stand under that scrutiny. No person in our close relationship can stand a situation where they're being measured. Part of what happens in the beginning of marriage, the first few years, is we mold ourselves to one another. And the person, if he's measuring things, will constantly feel like he's giving in. He's foregoing things. It's not he's giving in. It's part of the natural process that when two people are together and they're different, so each one has to mold himself to the other. And there are constantly going to be things that each one has to change their habits. He has to stop throwing his socks on the floor. He has to stop leaving half-eaten apples on the plate near the anywhere he's in the middle of doing something. He has to stop flossing and putting down the floss next to the bed because he doesn't want to get up and throw it in the garbage. He has to remember to put the toilet seat down. There are thousands of things he has to start remembering to do. When he finishes using his dishes, he should wash them and put them away. She has her things she has to get used to. She has to get used to living with such a slob. maybe not all the way, but at any rate, obviously this class is male oriented, so we don't have to talk about what she has to get used to. We have to give examples of what she has to get used to. But part of honoring one another is not measuring one another. You accept the person as they are. And anyone who thinks they know who they're marrying is fooling themselves. No one knows who they're marrying. We don't know. At the end of the day, we pray that God should help us. We date until we've researched sufficiently and it makes sense. And then once we get married, we start discovering who we've married. And then we have to make it work. Now, honoring one another is also important in front of the children, to honor what she says. And if you think she's going to go against what you think, then you two should discuss it and not in front of the kids. This is especially important because in children's mind, Abba and Ima, father and mother, is one entity. Whatever they say is true. It takes a child a long time to outgrow that. And even as adults, we have a tendency to accept what our parents say, much more than anyone else. They could affect our opinions much more strongly than anyone else can. And for two entities which are godly, father and mother, to contradict one another or to disagree, the world is shattered. The foundations, the basis of a child's life is that there's right and there's wrong and there's good and there's bad, and Abba and Ima are both good and they're both right. And if suddenly they disagree, if suddenly there's a contradiction between them, then the child has a contradiction which very often he doesn't even know how to handle. He emotionally has a hard time handling it. So it's very important that the parents are unified in front of their children. I told guys many times that the fact that they're right is irrelevant. If they're going to contradict their wives, then they're wrong. The fact that in the empirical sense they're right is irrelevant. If the mother said one way, so then they have to discuss it with their wives and figure out how what they're going to say as a couple. And sometimes he could say, I don't know, we're going to ask Ima, whatever Ima says, that's legitimate. But to say something different than she says, or to contradict what she says, or to mock what she says, is harming the children and harming the parents. Now, again, we started off at the base level of honor. We're going to work towards love. One of the foundations of the home, as we've discussed, is showing ha'aracha, admiration. Everyone needs to feel admired. A woman much more than a man, but that's one of the basic needs that everyone has. And that's one of the basic needs in every marriage. Everyone needs to feel appreciated. And we discussed that a huge percentage, way over 50% of women who left marriages didn't say it was because of the hard work or anything else. They said it was because they didn't feel appreciated enough. And appreciation is something that a person has to train himself to show. We're very unaccustomed to showing appreciation. In our generation, I have kids who ask me, why do I have to say thank you to a bus driver? He's just doing his job. Why do I have to say thank you to a cleaner? He's just doing his job. Why do I have to say thank you to a teacher? He's getting paid. He's doing his job. So our generation is one which is lacking in showing appreciation, and it ultimately reaches showing appreciation to God. A person who's godly shows appreciation to everyone. He knows to appreciate the grass he stands on. He knows to appreciate the air he breathes. And he knows to appreciate God, but he shows it also in his appreciation to mankind. And first and foremost in appreciation is one's wife. And usually that's where people are most lacking. We discussed in our introduction to the first class that in Judaism we measure a person firstly by what kind of person he is inside the home. Only after that, after, do we measure him outside the home. The world works the other way around. No one knows what kind of miserable husband George Washington was, and no one knows what kind of miserable marriage Abraham Lincoln had. No one cares. They were great generals, they were great leaders, that's what interests people. And by us, it's not that way. We measure a person first by how he is at home. People sometimes think, well, I'm doing my best. It's not working because of her. It doesn't work that way. People always think, the one married person here, people always think, I'm doing my best. No. Our sages said, a woman doesn't cut a treaty, make a pact with any person other than the man who makes her into a vessel, so to speak. And this is speaking in the physical sense, but it also Rabbi Yort once said, it also shows us the spiritual sense. Like the Maharal speaks often that the husband is the one that's supposed to give the shape. The woman gives the substance and he gives the shape. The man and the woman both mold themselves to one another. But the woman has a tendency to be more moldable than the man. And she molds herself to him much more than he will to her. It's natural. Now, obviously, you could walk in and demand that. That's not going to work. But naturally, what's going to happen is she's going to mold herself to him. And if the house, then more than likely, he's the one that's making it so. Our sages said, if the man is cheating on his wife in a big time, so she'll cheat on him in small time. She's a reflection of what he is. If he wants holiness in the house, he has to be a holy person. She's his mirror. And usually, when we look in the mirror, we look at what we want to see. And we overlook what we don't want to see. And in our wives, what usually happens is the parts of us that we're overlooking are the parts that are shown. And one's wife is one's best reflection. No one knows who you are like your wife does. And she's going to be a true reflection of everything, including those points which you don't like to admit you have. There's a saying in English, Rome wasn't built in a day. Well, marriages aren't built in a day either. It takes a lot of investment, and there are ups and downs like in everything else. People have to be prepared for downs. And in our world, we're accustomed to getting everything on a silver platter, getting it now. High-speed internet. Everything has to be quick, now. We're a generation that doesn't have patience. Well, good things come to those who wait, to those who invest. And in marriage, one has to be prepared to invest. And one has to be prepared for downs which will last a day, and downs which will last a week, and a month, and even years. A good marriage can have years where the relationship is down. You strive to correct it, you strive to fix it, but life has a way of throwing things at us which are out of our control. I know a couple that had a child born with Down syndrome. So they dealt with it beautifully, but obviously their relationship took its toll. So there were years where their relationship wasn't where it should have been, and they did the best they could, but still, there are limitations. We can't always control what life's going to throw at us, but we could control what we do with it and our approach to it. We have to remember that God gives us the woman that matches for us. We're not perfect, and our wives aren't going to be perfect, and we're supposed to build the home together. We mentioned that whenever people have something to say, they should always ask themselves, have I expressed my appreciation and my love with the same vehemence that I want to express anything else I want to express, anything that's less than positive? I think 100% of the time, but being that I can't say that, that's a big number on me, so I'll say 99% of the time, person hasn't. So if a person hasn't expressed his love and his appreciation with that vehemence, then he has no right to express anything else. I should first work on expressing the love and appreciation that is deserved. There were once women who had a class on self-improvement. And they came home and they were told to ask their spouses to make a list of the things they need to improve themselves in. So each woman came back to class and had this list that their husband gave them what they have to improve. And none of them were happy except for one. Her husband said, tomorrow I'll give you the list. The next day he came back with a bouquet of roses, and in the middle it said, I love you just the way you are. So even when a woman asks, what do I need to improve myself in? That's what she wants to hear. And that's the way a person should be. It's not that there isn't what to improve. It's not that there aren't things that every person can improve. But we should have so much appreciation that we do love the person the way they are. It's funny, I told this story and I just said it over. And a guy came to me a few months later and said, I just had the same thing. Thank God you said the story. It worked so well. And my wife came to me and said, you know, every person has to improve. What do I have to improve myself in? So I did that trick, and boy, she's in seventh heaven. Our relationship hasn't... It took such a soaring since he said that. He said, took a leap upward, and we're still on the high ever since I said that. It was... Okay, so this is an important point. independence. Everyone needs closeness, and everyone needs their independence. Men need more independence usually, and women need more closeness usually. We discussed how speech, talking, for women is a mode of contact and how important it is for them. Like one woman once told her husband, the Gemara states, "Asara kabim shel dibur yardu la'olam." There were 10 measurements of speech that came down to the world, the Gemara says. 9 were given to women, and 1 was given to men. So one wife once told her husband, "I was given 9 times as much talking as you were. God ordained me to talk 9 times as much as you. What do you want? Obviously I'm talking all the time. I gotta use it up. So we have to be prepared for that, and we have to understand that for them it's a sign of love, and we have to appreciate that when they speak to us, that's their connection and they want us to speak to them. Men, as we discussed, are very tachlis oriented. Women need the speech as a sign of love. We discussed how it's important to take time to be together, and this probably means more time than you would want, because being men, we have a tendency for more independence. There's another important difference in this issue between us and women, and that difference is the approach that we have to time spent together. For a guy, if we went shopping together, if we took care of looking at apartments together, we just spent the whole day together. It's very common that the guy goes with the girl, especially when they're engaged. They look at apartments, they look at furniture, they look at different things they're going to buy. After spending a whole day together, she's upset. And he's wondering, "What are you upset about?" And she says, "Why don't we take some time together?" He's thinking, "What do you mean? We were just together all day. More time together?" Well, as far as girls go, that wasn't time together. This is true for every girl, as far as I know, and I tell this always to chatanim and to married people. For us guys, if we spend time together doing something, we spend time together. For women, if you don't take time doing nothing, sitting holding hands, sitting for ice cream together, for a cup of tea, sitting on a bench together, you didn't spend time together. So be prepared for that. That's the difference between us.
So what is spending time then?
Spending time is sitting and talking. Not being busy doing 10 things together. Take the time together. Shut the cell phones. Sit down. Not that we have to do 100 things and discuss which apartment we're going to get and who knows what else. Sitting down, just being together.
And devising the day.
What?
Revising or...
telling over what happened that day? Yeah.
You know it, even if you know it and you did it together, but you should...
So that's a different point. Guys sometimes think that girls want you to listen to them for what they have to say for 10 hours. Now, part of it is true. There are certain things they want you to listen to. But sometimes they just want us to be together talking. And they don't care if you do the talking. They don't care if you guide the conversation. She just wants the time that we're talking together. So if you're not going to fill the space, she'll fill the space. But if you want, you could fill the space. And you'll notice that sometimes it seems like there's rambling. Sometimes it's going from topic, 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 and you're wondering what the point is. Well, the point is to talk. So if you want to talk about different things, talk about them. Because there's a good chance that she'll be just as happy with that. She wants the time together. Now, once we're talking about differences between boys and girls, we should enumerate a few. When there is a disagreement, sometimes they do happen. So we have different inclinations. The guy's inclination is, "Give me time." And the girl's inclination is, "Let's get together." And he's saying, "We work together and look what happened. But let's take a break." She's saying, "It's not enough, everything you said to me until now, now you want to leave." So we have different inclinations. She wants us to be together. He wants us to be each to have his own autonomy. Bugs. Don't try to explain to your wife that bugs are nothing, they're this eensy-weensy little thing and you're a million times bigger. Bugs are a serious issue, your responsibility, take care of them. Speech. It's a speech. Details. Women pay special attention to details. your wife could discuss with you for 20 minutes where you're going to hang this picture. Hold it there. No, maybe it's better there. Let's take a look at how it is there. Well, we appreciate their affinity for details when it comes to how they get dressed and how they make everything beautiful and wonderful food. We have to understand this is part of their nature. Technical stuff, so many women have a hard time with that. Don't try to get them to understand how to turn on a computer. It's too complicated. You prepare it, I'll take care of it. There are those women who are computer analysts. But there are many women who, that's not their forte. Commenting. Let's say there's something that that should be different. And you should know that everything we're discussing is in the ideal. Everyone that gets married discovers one or two big issues, or three or four. There are going to be certain big issues in every marriage. Now, those big issues could be a guy discovers that his wife gets angry and bashes up dishes. Another guy discovers that anything he tells his wife, she says to everyone else. A third guy discovers that his wife won't spend a penny. He wants to buy an ice cream bar, and she says, "What? You waste your money on that? I wanted to buy you some ice cream. Don't waste your money next time. Don't get me flowers. Don't get me ice cream. We can't afford it." That's how you respond when I try to show affection. A third guy has the reverse problem. His wife is spending the paycheck before it's home. So these are issues before it's home. So these are issues that every couple is going to have to work on. Not every couple is going to have all of them, but every couple is going to have their few serious issues. And everyone has to be prepared for that and know that it's always so. And if we're truthful, then we'll recognize that we as guys also have our serious issues. It's not just they. Today we've reached a generation which is opposite of the previous generations. Up until men spend money and women have to keep a handle on the budget. Today more and more I'm encountering that the guys spend like there's no tomorrow, and the girls are the ones that really are taking care of the budget responsibly. So again, it depends on the home, but each of these issues could come up, and the differences are there, and the couples have to know how to work them out. One guy discovers his wife giving him the truth. Okay. Every couple is going to have their issues, and serious issues.
Or sometimes they are 24 hours busy.
What do you mean?
Well, they do every kind of things every minute in the home. Night.
Every wife is fitting in 36 hours into 24. There's no such thing, that's what they always joke. No such thing as a non-working mother. If you're a mother, you're a working mother. No such thing as a woman who's running a household who isn't working.
Usually I said to my wife, take time to sit, come. She's always busy.
Us men have a tendency to talk in theory. We can say, "Why don't you take some time to drink?" If we ever try to do what our wives fit in today, we'll never get any meal in. In theory, we have all these ideas, and we're not very practical. It's very easy for us to come in and say, "Why don't you do this? Why don't you do that?" But practically, it doesn't work. Any man who gives in eitzah should sit down and try to figure out if it really works. There's another difference between us, and that is that men think that they always have to find the solution. The man always wants to be the knight in shining armor. So when the woman sometimes complains or expresses a concern, the guy automatically thinks she wants a solution. She wants his advice. Could be all she wants is someone to listen and sympathize. More than often, that's what's happening. And guys sometimes think, you know, she's so talui, she's so dependent on me. Why can't she think things through on her own? Every little thing she has to consult with me. And the girls are thinking, he's so bossy, everything I do he has an opinion on. Well, there's a problem in communication. Guys assume that when the second a girl tells them about a problem, she wants them to suggest a solution. And girls very often express things only because they want the sympathy. There was a guy I know whose wife was complaining how much work she has to do, how she has to prepare for Shabbos and cook and clean and wash. So he automatically assumed she wanted a solution. So he said, "Okay, I'll wash the floors." He's been washing the floors ever since. She never wanted him to wash the floors. She just wanted him to show appreciation, to show sympathy, to say, you know, this is amazing. How do you fit so many stuff in? He automatically assumed she wants a solution. So what's the solution? I'll do it. Another guy's wife tells him, you know, I don't know, I'm going to make it between this interview and that interview. I have so many things to do today, and you have the car. I don't see how I'm going to do it. She wanted him to say, you're amazing. You're willing to let me take the car and you have to run here and there. Let's figure out how it's going to work. Or maybe give up the car. He said, you know what, I'll leave work early. I'll come take you. That's not what she wanted. She wanted appreciation and sympathy. So us guys have a tendency to automatically assume that the wife or the girl wants a solution. And that's not always the case. We mentioned that one of the deepest things that a wife needs is to feel that she is the only one in her husband's eyes. And the worst thing a person can do is mention another woman in front of his wife. Even to compliment another woman, you'll be surprised they got dressed. Or how smart this girl is, or how nice this neighbor's wife is. A woman has a tendency, she wants her husband's compliments to be for her. And it doesn't mean that she can't say something nice about another woman, but yet our sages said, "Eni shamit kana la biyar chaverta." A woman is most jealous of her friend. Extreme example of this is what our sages say happened between Adam and Chava, Adam and Eve. That after Eve ate from the Eitz Hadas, from the forbidden fruit, so she saw that she was going to die. And she said, uh-oh, now I'm going to die, and Adam's going to marry another woman. There was no other woman in the world yet, but that was her concern. She wasn't worried she was going to die. She said, I'm going to die, and he's going to marry someone else. So our sages said that's the deepest thing in a woman, the need to feel like she's number one. And that's one of the things a husband has to cultivate, to show her that she is the most precious thing in his life. And she is. There's a common misconception. The Gemara records a story about a couple that were married and they spoke different dialects. And he told her, go place this on the bava. And bava in his dialect meant the windowsill. She thought he was referring to the chief rabbi, Bava ben Buta. His name was also Bava. So she went and took it and placed it on Bava ben Buta. She walked into. He's in the middle of giving a speech. He's the chief rabbi. And she's going to place something on his head. So, she explains to him what happened. That her husband said to do it. So he told her, Ishak Shira, you're a... So it's become common that people quote this. What's an ishak shirah? What's a kosher woman? A woman who does what her husband says. And guys especially like to quote this. Well, gentlemen, that's not what our sages had in mind. Women were never robots. Our sages said a good woman leads her husband to Gan Eden. Doesn't say he leads her. It says she leads him. And a bad woman leads him to Gehenna. But she's leading him. Why? How's she leading him? If she's a kosher wife, she's supposed to be doing whatever he said. She's leading him to Gan Eden? Our sages say that at the time of the Egel, right? Moshe tells them, go take your wife's jewelry. And the wife said, no way. How could they say no way? They were all kosher wives. The husband says, give me the jewelry. Or else, right? She said, no way. And the Jews sin in the Egel. They say, we're turning back. We're going back to Egypt. The wife said, you could go. If God said, we're having the land, we're staying. We're not going anywhere. We're going into Israel. All the men are ready. We're going into Israel. All the men are ready to leave. The women are ready to stay. You guys are alone. Yaakov is on his way back from Lavan. He's on his way back home. And suddenly he has a problem with Esav. He says, you know, Esav's going to attack. We have to divide everything into two camps. Who knows? We might get killed. His wives tell him, you didn't tell us that when you asked us to leave Lavan. They leave him. Yaakov's all alone. Where's this relationship that people think the Torah inscribes? That whatever the husband says is going to the land of Israel. God tells him, go back to Israel. He goes to his wives and he starts consulting with him. What's there to consult? He's the husband. What he says goes. We see from the Torah, we see again and again that that's not the way the relationship was or is. Starting with Adam and Eve. He said, don't eat from the fruits. She went and ate from the fruits. Yitzchak and Rivka. Yitzchak wants to bless Yaakov, Esav. Rivka says Yaakov should get the blessing, so she finds a way to get her way. She wasn't a kosher wife, She wasn't going to do what her husband wants. So all these fine kosher women did what was right. And we see again and again in the Gemara and in the Shulchan Aruch that women were not these docile creatures that you could tell them what to do and they're going to do it. So what is the concept of Ishak Shira? That's something that needs a special class to be discussed. But it is not what everyone thinks it is. And no one should expect it. And no one should be disappointed when he doesn't get it. Because no one's going to get it. Family relationships. Family is an asset. And our sages say you try to choose a girl who comes from a good family. That's definitely an asset. But one has to recognize that you're marrying the girl and the family is going to stay out the door. Sometimes we have to know to limit the relationship with the family. In the ideal sense, we should honor our parents, honor our in-laws. It's a nice thing to call one's parents and hear how they're doing. For some parents, the right thing is to call every day. The bare minimum is to call every Friday. And I believe that one should also call his in-laws out of respect. Our sages said that one could tell his wife, I don't have to live with your parents. I don't want my in-laws here. It could also her husband in that. But that's not the ideal situation. The ideal situation, one should have a good relationship. One has a mitzvah to honor his parents and his in-laws. One has to know to limit certain things. Former friends or friends. A house should have a door. And that door should be locked. And people should know that there are times when they could come in and there are times when they can't come in. And the same thing is true with the phone. Today we live in an age where you could enter people's homes within a second. The phone here rings till 1, 2 o'clock in the morning. So it's okay. When we want to go to sleep, we disconnect it. I'm not encouraging anyone to call 1, 2 o'clock in the morning unless you have to. But there have to be limits. And people have to know that those limits are different for each couple and at different periods in the marriage, you need to set different limits. I strongly recommend when couples get married, the first 2 months, I tell all chatanim, at night, they should shut off all the phones. Disconnect the regular phone, shut off the cell phones. The first 2 months of marriage are times where they should spend the evenings together. I'm not talking about having marital relations. I'm talking about talking. I'm talking about having the time to themselves. I would tell couples to do it for 4 months, but no one's going to listen to me. So I always tell them, I would tell you 4 months, but I'm telling you two. At the end of two, you'll appreciate it so much, you on your own will do it for four. And so far, every couple I know has done that. They do it for two, and then they see that was an amazing idea, we're doing it for four. So I say, try it. Start out with 2 months. You come home at night, disconnect the phones, shut the phones. Now, there are friends that shouldn't be in the house. If the girl has a former boyfriend, he doesn't belong here. If the guy has former girlfriends, or a former girlfriend, she doesn't belong there. There are relationships that have to be severed. And there's nothing wrong with it. There are instances where it's more complicated than that. He's the one that helped her become from, or she's the one that helped him become from. So we have to sometimes consult with someone, but more often than not, the answer is going to be, your first priority is building your own home. And that means that the door is going to be closed. We once lived in a building where we had a fantastic neighbor. She was the nicest person around. She was always helpful and she was always home and she was very, very nice. And she'd always, whatever you wanted, she'd give you above and beyond. And I told my wife, after we had met her once or twice, I said, do me a favor, from now on, only you talk to her. She was so nice that I felt it's not right. Our sages said that Shlomis Bas Divri, she got into trouble. She was raped by an Egyptian. Why? Because she was nice to everyone. She was extra nice to everyone. So it's nice to be extra nice. But women have to know to be extra nice to women. And men have to know to be extra nice to men. And men have to be to distance themselves from women who are extra nice to them. And women have to distance themselves from other men who are extra nice to them. There's a basic rapport that's correct. And beyond that is improper, is incorrect. Sometimes there are issues which need discussion, and the couple disagree on them. So, firstly, a word to the wives. Us men are accustomed to synthesizing information through our minds. We break it down to logical reasons, and we walk in and say, these are the reasons I think A, B, and C. Women don't work that way. A lot of their decisions come from their heart and their intuition. Now, us men think that we're much better than they are. We could back up what we say with what we call logic. And because of that, we think what we say is right. Well, very, very often, women's intuition senses something which our logic can't pick up, and they're right. A couple that goes to see homes where they're going to move into, so they go to see one home, she says the kitchen is too small. They go to see the next home, she says there's no light in the home. They go to see the third home, she says there's no porch for the kid to play on. They reach the fourth home, she says it's the top floor. They reach the fifth home, she says, yeah, but there's a mold over there. Finally, they reach the sixth home. And she says, nope, this isn't it. She says, what do you mean? It's not the top floor. There's a huge kitchen. There's no mold. What were the other points? There's a porch. There's good lighting. Everything you said is here in the home. What's wrong with this home? And she says, I don't know, it just isn't it. So he could go out of his mind at this point. He's saying, I don't understand. You gave me logical reasons why every other home wasn't right. But if we're not going to move into this home, I want to understand why. That's not a correct expectation. Her intuition says something is off here. Who's going to be spending more time in the house? You or her? For sure her. Her call is, she gets the call where you're going to live, not you. That's the place where if she's uncomfortable with it, you don't do it. Now, even let's say you were to spend more time in the home, still, if she's uncomfortable with it, why should she be living in a house she's uncomfortable with every day? But if it comes down to a situation where there are two houses and you have to close on one of them, and she's adamant, not this one, then I would give her the decision because she's the one that's going to be in the house more. And her intuition, more often than not, is right. So we have to get accustomed to respecting what they say, even though it doesn't fit our square logic. But if there are issues that do have to be raised, so there are a few tips that are important. Firstly, think about it. Is there a way of approaching the situation without going directly? There's a guy who can't stand the fact that his house is always messy. So the smart way of approaching it is, the one time when she does clean up, he should express tremendous appreciation for what she did. If we strengthen the positive, then by default, that's what's going to be in the house. Without the wives even noticing that that's what happened. The second thing is, he should think, how important is it to bring up this issue? And if, at the end of the day, it is an issue that's important to bring up, then, for example, a husband finds that his wife isn't being truthful. She tells him she went shopping that morning and really she was home all day. So that's not critical, but it reaches a point where she says the kids were in school and they were home. She says she's not going to let him watch TV, and she did. Now, these are common things in many, many homes. But if, for whatever reason, he feels that these are issues which they have to discuss, so then the trick is, firstly, every woman has times in the month where she's more nervous and less apt to be pleasant, somewhere around her period. For most women, it's directly before the period begins and maybe in the beginning of the period, the onset, but every man's going to learn his wife. So definitely you don't do it then. Secondly, you should wait for a time that you're permitted. The husband and wife are allowed to be together when the woman is pure. So that's the best time to have these discussions. Thirdly, it's important not to bring up the topic directly after something occurred, because then a person is going to be defensive. If something just came up relating to this topic, then a person is going to be defensive. The ideal is if we could mention a story about someone else, and not even address the topic directly. Make up a story that's similar enough to get the point across. But if we do have to bring it up, then we want to find a time when things are calm. The relationship is at its best. Most often, what happens is, he comes home, he finds the kids at home, I thought you said you're sending them to school. Didn't we agree that they're failing and they're not going to make it if they miss day after day just because he says his stomach's hurting him a little bit? How'd you leave him home? Didn't we agree? You said you're doing it. How'd you... Da, 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 da. More often than not, the husband reacts right away, and usually it's not productive at all. If our goal is to move forward and make our marriage look differently, then we have to control ourselves and know to bring up the issue when it's a good time, not directly when it occurs. The next point is, it's important to mention it as something that happened, not as a recurring occurrence. If you say, look, I notice that you just don't tell the truth, so the response you'll get is, okay, well, you married me. Tough luck. If you say, you know, this happened here and here, and what you said didn't exactly correlate with what happened, and I think we have to discuss it, so you've given her room to accept it. If you come and say you're this type of person or you have this and this trait, then more often than not, she's going to say, okay, that's it. That's who I am. You married me. When we bring it up, we have to be prepared with solutions. Just to come and say something's wrong is pointless. You got nothing out of that. If you want to bring something up, you have to be prepared with solutions. You have to be prepared to say, I think maybe we should try. And you have to have more than one solution, because not necessarily what you think is what's going to be good for her. Not every solution you think of is really viable. I'll buy one should be. So if you're going to come and raise an issue,